Saturday night. That means it's time for the Don Tony Show.
The wait all week long is finally over. Get Don Tony's perspective on current affairs in the world of pro wrestling and much more. The Don Tony Show.
And now, your host, the man, the legend, Don Tony.
Fake yawn, but I did yawn about 5 minutes before it went live. Good morning for my American friends. Good afternoon for my international friends. And happy Sunday for everybody that lives like 15,000 miles away. The Don Tony Show is live for Saturday morning, July 1st, 2023. Wow, we're already in July. Unbelievable. I hope everybody's having a good weekend. For those who celebrate, happy 4th of July. Much love to all of you out there. You know, I actually found out that this weekend, this weekend I was watching, binge watching some stuff, and I did not know, like, the routine of barbecues actually started on the 4th of July, many, many moons ago. That's why, you know, you get people like, oh, don't forget why we celebrate 4th of July. But, you know, people get together, they have barbecues, spend time with friends, family, touch grass. So I hope everybody has a great weekend. Here in New York, it looks like it's sunny out. I am going to be checking out Money in the Bank, which is happening in a matter of hours as I record this. Money in the Bank, I think everybody is looking forward to it. It's going to be really interesting. And listen, I'm not trying to use this for cheap plugs, but legit, we're already getting flooded with DMs and emails. All of the predictions that we made, not just match results, but if Brock Lesnar's going to show up and take out Cody Rhodes, accept his challenge. The tease of the Bloodline Civil War heading into SummerSlam. Did you see that little interaction yesterday when the Usos told Roman Reigns that they would be fine with only one person as the tribal chief, and it was Solo Sikoa? And Roman Reigns proceeded to laugh his ass off. Laughing his ass off. Like, are you kidding me? I mean, yeah, a little bit too much of a fake laugh, but when Solo Sikoa gave him that little stare, like, yeah, what the fuck is wrong with that, huh? You know, it gave me flashbacks. Anybody remember this thumbnail that I made back in March? People like, wait, I don't remember Roman Reigns taking out Solo Sikoa. Yeah, that is my best attempt at Photoshop. Yeah, the bloodletting may actually lead into SummerSlam. And the reason why I have the July 8th date on it is because next Saturday's Don Tony Show, maybe we'll be on to something. But I'm looking forward to Money in the Bank. I will say this. There's a lot of buzz because Michael Cole on SmackDown yesterday said that this was the main event. Cody Rhodes versus Dominic Mysterio. And you get the usual noise online. The fuck? The fuck could that be the main event? Listen, when was the last time that we really got a caca main event for a WWE premium live event? An AEW premium live event? An MLW, the Impact Wrestling? I trust these companies that if they're going to do something, they're doing it for specific reasons. I'm not crapping on it. I'd rather have Cody and Dominic close out Money in the Bank than it open, be in the middle, and it suck. I don't know what's going to happen. My gut feeling tells me probably the Bloodline Civil War closes it out. You could have more than one main event, you know, but just the fact that something is ending the show, I mean, you know what I compare it to? I know this is kind of goofy, but it's like sometimes you ever go to a restaurant and it might feel like they're trying to rush you out the door, but you'll order your appetizers, you'll order your salad, and you'll order your dinner, and they'll bring out the appetizer. Literally, like 2 minutes later, they'll bring you out your salad and your dinner, and you look at your table and it's flooded with food. guess what? I might actually eat some of my dinner first and maybe save the appetizer and eat that last. If I got a nice, good plate of mozzarella sticks or battered onion rings, yeah, I might actually eat them last. So what? As long as I'm getting a good meal, as long as I'm enjoying myself, it's a big deal. I don't think it's that big of a deal. So today we're going to talk a little bit of what went down last night with SmackDown. It was pre-recorded a few hours earlier because of the time difference in England. Not a bad show at all. Good lead-in to Money in the Bank. Jesus, Monday's Raw rating. Holy shit, almost hit 2 million viewers, and we thought Monday's show was kind of like lackluster, and I know what a lot of you are going to say. Well, DT, when people tune in, they don't know that the show they're about to watch is good or it's bad. I get that. But Hour 3 stood almost 1.8 and a half million when it's usually 1.4, 1.3. So I'm kind of surprised that people stuck around for the full 3 hours like they did. We'll do the ratings breakdown on Monday. But I will say this also, because you notice how nobody's talking about it? I know the number is low, but still. And no, I'm not talking about AEW Collision. Impact Wrestling this past Thursday did 149,000 viewers. That is up almost 45%. From the week before, and nobody's talking about it. Nobody even reports Impact's numbers anymore. I know they're a low number, but still, you want to see progress. When was the last time you seen anybody buzz about Trinity being in Impact Wrestling? How sad is that? So Monday we'll do a little ratings, and but seriously, if you haven't done so already, make sure you check out this preview and predictions for the Money in the Bank. Even if you tune into them after the show is over, we got into so many scenarios after Money in the Bank, I think we're going to nail them all. Pretty wild, you know, when you go back and you listen to it. So it's almost reminiscent of the draft. Remember the predictions we made on the draft? You got Ali. You got, who else is bat now in NXT? You got Ali there. We think Nikki Cross is going to be there. Dana Brooke is going to be there. Baron Corbin was there for a little while. The three names that we talked about going to NXT. Corbin was the top of my list. So, all right. Now, unfortunately, I have to do this at the beginning of the show. We lost Darren Drozdoff, former football player of the Denver Broncos. I think he played somewhere between like 1992 and 1995. Then he ventured into pro wrestling. You know, I remember when he was in ECW for a short period of time and he got his ass kicked from New Jack. But, you know, anybody that goes back to the hotline days, anybody goes back to the Minority Report, I mean, you already knew this, that Darren Drozdoff, Droz, actually used to tune into our stuff. I mean, I haven't heard from him, probably in about 15 years. But you know how cool it is when we're doing the Blackheart Sports Entertainment Hotline? You know, myself, Matt Zombie, Brian Damage, and Timmy Arson. And you get like a little, you know, message here and there from some people, and Droz actually used to enjoy the show. After we had D'Lo Brown on the Masked Maniac show, which I know the clip is still online because I've always used it for bragging rights, because D'Lo Brown used to be a big follower of our content, and he talked about how he used to bring it to Japan, and you'd have A-Train and him and a whole bunch of the other American wrestlers tuning into our shit. And it made me feel good. It made me feel like, you know, not even, it's not a matter of bragging, but it's cool that the people that you appreciate, you know, even I got a DM from a journalist about a month ago. I'm not going to say who he is, but I know he tunes in. And he sent me a DM. And it's somebody that's controversial, but very well liked. And he's like, you know, dude, keep up the good work. Big fan of what you do and this and that. I wrote back to him. I said, no, I should be saying that to you, not to me. But when we got a message from Droz, you know, this was after what happened. I think it was October 5th, 1999. You know, unfortunately, he became a paraplegic after landing on his head during a match with D'Lo Brown here in New York. and the struggles that this guy went through. You know, I'm not trying to say this to be comical, but one of my former co-hosts on the Minority Report was a guy that I always joke around with, Joey 924. Joey 924, to be serious for a minute, is wheelchair prone. He had a disability, stunted his height and everything, and he was disabled. And we used to have like lighthearted jokes on the shows, and it just seemed to click. Like everybody knew there was no malice until the falling out at the end. But you know, so we always had a special place in our hearts for Draws. And come on, last week, was it the sit down last week? We brought up Draws, and I did my impersonation. I don't have a pail anywhere nearby. I want to get a pail just to do it one more time. But how many times, if you had a dollar every time I did this on the show, he's going to puke. He's going to puke. He's going to puke. Draws, beyond the mat. So 54 years old, passed away yesterday. We don't know the cause of death. WWE posted a nice tribute on their website. The family of Darren Drozdoff issued this statement, and I quote, "We are sad to share our beloved Darren passed away this morning of natural causes." Yes, natural causes, you know, but we don't know exactly, you know, it's probably, you know, fell asleep, never woke up. You know, it's sobering because I'm very, very close to his age. And it just goes to show you that you could go anytime. He says, their family says, there's no words to convey the deep sense of loss, of sadness we're feeling right now. Darren, affectionately known as Draws, was once involved in tragic ring accident while wrestling for the WWE in 1999 that rendered him a quadriplegic. Nevertheless, Draws maintained the championship mindset and lived every day to the fullest, even though he was unable to move from the neck down for the past 24 years. His own words sum up his relentless positivity in the midst of adversity. Quote, "There is always another day. Just because I'm paralyzed and stuck in a wheelchair does not mean that my life is over. I've learned to live again, and my life is far from over." We lived this journey with him for the past 24 years. We were always there through the good times and the bad, providing him with unconditional love. We would like to extend our deepest appreciation to everyone, all of his fans, teammates, colleagues, and friends for all the love and support he received over the years. You gave him meaning, purpose, and something to live for. He loved each and every one of you and cherished the conversations, notes, and letters he received. His faith in humanity never faltered. So know that for all the love you've shown him, he's loved you back. We would also like to thank WWE for treating him like family and for all of their love, support, and stepping up to make sure that Darren always had the proper care and treatment needed to live in his condition over the past 24 years. He was a devoted son, brother, and friend who always put others first, especially his family. He was kind, generous, and was always there for his people. He was our guiding light who lit up our lives with infinite love and wonder. His smile was healing. His warmth, love, and laughter were infectious. We could always turn to him for wisdom and solace, and his absence feels like a giant hole in our family and our hearts. Everyone who knew Darren was a better person because of it. He taught everyone so much about how to look at life. He would not want anyone to be sad at this moment and would want this to be a celebration of his life, to be remembered for all the good things that he accomplished, the fun, the laughter, and the great memories he shared with everyone. And this is always my go-to picture when I think about Darren Drozdoff. The fact that he had closure, you know, was good with D'Lo Brown, not just recently, but for many, many years. Believe me when I tell you, I remember talking about it with D'Lo Brown on the Mass Maniac show. And keep in mind, this is not like an interview done 20 years after the incident. This was a couple of years after. And yes, accidents happen in wrestling. But as we talked about last week, you know, could you imagine even to this day what Ridge Holland must think about? And hopefully Big E will make a return and he's not prone to a wheelchair. But it's still, imagine the guilt. Imagine, you can't help But, you know, have those threats, death threats, insults, blame thrown your way, that's got to really wear on you. Even if you do have a good friendship with the person that you were in the ring with. And D'Lo Brown, I'm telling you, early on, that had to be just overwhelming. And I'm sure it is. And especially now with Draws passing away. You know, I mean, accidents happen. And this was an unfortunate accident. And, you know, our thoughts and our prayers are with the entire Drozdov family, for all of his friends, wrestlers, you know, buddies outside of wrestling. Our thoughts are with you as well. And, yeah, rest in peace, Darren Drozdov, 54 years old. Good guy. Good guy. All right. Let's move on. Let's get a little lighthearted for a minute. I wasn't going to talk about this now, but might as well. Lacey Evans. There's something going on social media right now that I'm a little confused about. Sergeant Slaughter just did an interview with Bill Apter. Now, in no way, shape, or form am I criticizing Bill Apter. Bill Apter is one of my most beloved people that I've ever met in pro wrestling. That guy is just awesome. I also remind myself that Bill Apter is from the old school with the wrestling magazines where everything was storyline and kayfabe. And yes, I know we're in a different era. And by the way, we're going to talk about the AEW Fight Forever video game a little bit later as well. A lot of the legitimate reviews are starting to come in, and I will give you my honest take on it as well. But I just want to show you something, just something you get a kick out of, because if you notice online, nobody is referencing this. They just figure, oh, let's turn this into a story where I don't think it's a story. Bill Apter comes from the magazines where you play into storyline more than anything else. And he just interviewed Sergeant Slaughter. Sergeant Slaughter is upset at WWE and Lacey Evans for using his Cobra Clutch finisher without asking him permission. He does bring up that Ted DiBiase used to do the $1 million dream, but he didn't call it the Cobra Clutch. Sergeant Slaughter says, and I quote, and I got a video clip for you. Sergeant Slaughter says, and I quote, I'm a little upset. It doesn't upset me because I know she can't put a Cobra Clutch on like I do. But it's just the thought that she's using a move without, at least, I would think, a writer or somebody would call me up and say, hey, do you mind if we use the Cobra Clutch? And he feels that they should have used a different name to it. Okay. All right. Even now, Sergeant Slaughter and his daughter, which I have said all along, I believe this is all storyline, to try to get Lacey Evans more over as a heel. Sergeant Slaughter's daughter even tweeted, Lacey Evans says, you look ridiculous doing the move. Okay. Let's rewind 6-7 months ago. December 2022, January 2023. Lacey Evans, they're now doing new vignettes. Not the ones where she's crying and talking about her history, and I'm not knocking her. We got to clarify which vignettes we're talking about. We're talking about where the rebuilding of Lacey Evans. Do you remember those rebuilding vignettes? Okay. Lacey Evans was returning, I believe, the first week in January 2023. Well, in December, there was a lot of buzz about Sergeant Slaughter possibly managing Lacey Evans. And here's just one of a few tweets online asking Sergeant Slaughter in December if he would be interested in becoming the manager of Lacey Evans. And he said, you know, if WWE offered him the opportunity, his response was, need the opportunity. Sergeant Slaughter and Lacey Evans, rumored together, was going on in January. Not only that, Lacey Evans was going to be doing the Marine character and was also going to be doing the Cobra Clutch. That is why they were going to put Sergeant Slaughter possibly with Lacey Evans. My friends, end of December. If you got video, look at your screen. If you got audio, just listen for a few seconds.
You are the weapon, and your method of destruction is the Cobra Clutch.
That's almost 7 months ago, 6 months ago. This shit's been out there. Sergeant Slaughter was aware of it. Sergeant Slaughter was open to managing her. And look, we go one step further. Look at the video. She's doing the Cobra Clutch. And did everybody fucking fall asleep? Please, whatever you guys are smoking, send me some. Why is everybody leaving that out? This is not a major thing going on. If anything at minimum, Sergeant Slaughter may be offended a little bit that he isn't the manager of Lacey Evans. But I gotta be honest with you. Sergeant Slaughter has been a baby face for decades now. Sergeant Slaughter is older. And that's not an insult. Sergeant Slaughter is much more frail. Sergeant Slaughter's voice is very, very, it's much lighter. It's softer. He's not going to go out there if Lacey Evans is a heel and start saying, "Oh, you maggots." He ain't. People are going to laugh at him. If Lacey Evans would have came back as a babyface, yes, could happen. I personally think if Sergeant Slaughter would have returned as the manager for Lacey Evans and Lacey Evans was a babyface, I would have compared Sergeant Slaughter to Arnold Skolin when he used to manage Bob Backlund. And I know I'm doing a way outdated reference, and this is not a shot on Arnold Skolin, but anybody that watched wrestling in the early 80s, when Skolin was the manager of Bob Backlund, he was like a fat potted plant. He did nothing. He did nothing. When Backlund was being submitted, he's getting the ass kicked. You don't see him. Come on, Bob. No, he's just standing there like, "Yeah, well, I wonder what I'm going to have for dinner tonight. Gee, do they have drinks in the back?" This guy would just stand there. He was a potted plant. I mean, even who was it? Came back for a short period of time and Shawn Michaels as manager? At least he got his ass kicked in the mid-90s. I can't remember his name right now. Someone in the chat will bail me out. But the point is, I mean, after all of these months, I'm offended that WWE... Motherfucker, that's a tribute to you. Motherfucker, they call it the razor's edge, the Cobra Clutch. You know, be happy that in 2023, Jose Lothario, thank you, Joseph Ramos. Jose Lothario. Wait a minute. Joseph Ramos. Isn't that Joey 924's name? I think so. Spelled a little differently, though. But seriously, calling it the Cobra Clutch. Calling it the Cobra Clutch in 2023, that is a fucking tribute to Sergeant Slaughter. He should be honored. He should be honored. And I bet you, I'm a huge fan of Sergeant Slaughter. Absolutely. I used to piss off my grandmother when he was a heel. That was great. But if WWE would have had Lacey Evans doing that move and they would have called it something else, Sergeant Slaughter would have done an interview and said, "They can't even call it the right name. What's the matter? They can't celebrate that I came up with that move." That he would have bitched if the move was called something different. The Evans Annihilator. You know, like, come on. The Lacey Clutch. He would have been pissed off that they didn't trade. So, to me, this is just, you know, much to do about nothing. So, by the way, I thought this was funny. While I was doing some research, apparently that is Lacey Evans's Mount Rushmore of women's wrestling. She's got herself on there, Alondra Blaze, Sarah Amato, and Natalya. Very interesting. By the way, speaking of Mount Rushmore, yes, I segued it on purpose. Bailey did an interview with PW Mania a couple of days ago. And I got to give props to SE Scoops. They're the ones that did this little drawing. Bailey was asked who her Mount Rushmore of female pro wrestlers would be. And her answer was, and I think this is cool because of Money in the Bank. She chose Lita, Sasha Banks, Trish Stratus, and she's always undecided about the fourth, but right now she's going with Chyna as number four. So, but remember what I said about Trish Stratus being in this women's Money in the Bank ladder match. And there's some rumors that Charlotte Flair could possibly replace Zelina Vega later today. I'm not going to complain either way. If Zelina Vega has an injury or cannot compete, putting Charlotte Flair in there is strong name value. But I will say this. Trish Stratus in this Money in the Bank ladder match, I mean, I could imagine her climbing that briefcase and grabbing it. I know it would piss off a boatload of people because most of us think Io Sky is the one that's going to get it. But there is a possibility that Bayley could end up fucking up Io Sky's chances or vice versa, and then someone else steals the briefcase. Trish Stratus walking around with that briefcase would be really interesting, but I will say this. When you look at everybody else in that match, from Becky Lynch to Bayley to Zoe Stark, you know, they absolutely, I don't want to say idolize, but Trish is one of their mentors growing up. You know, so imagine being in that match and being with someone who inspired you in some way to become a pro wrestler. That's fucking cool, man. That's cool. And at least Trish doesn't look overly out of shape or way too old. Yes, her promos are not what they used to be. Her in-ring work is not exactly what it used to be. But at least we have the feeling that she's putting it all out there. Yes, sometimes you put it all out there. If it sucks, that doesn't mean you get a push anyway. Look up Dana Brooke is a good example of that. But Trish Stratus, it feels like she's got that second wind to do it one more time. So, you know, I just figured I'd share that with Bailey. And by the way, yesterday on SmackDown, Bailey cut a nice chunk of hair out of Shotzi Blackheart. And then after that was all said and done, she was parading social media, showing off shades of karma in AEW. Remember when they would cut the women's locks and then walk around with it, kind of like a badge of honor? Yeah, it's been rumored that Shotzi Blackheart was going to be changing up her look a little bit. That's the reason why they did this. Now, the funny thing about it is Shotzi Blackheart has loads of hair extensions. She could probably just get a hair extension. No harm done. Hey, big fucking deal. I'd go on Amazon and get another hair extension and spray paint it green. You know, but a lot of people think that Shotzi Blackheart is going to be changing up her look a little bit, so I'll say this, Shotzi with that extremely long hair, especially when it's green, like, why would you change that? I mean, unless maybe she just felt change was needed. But, my God, yesterday, SmackDown, you know, I'm going to give you a reference. If you want to go look at the two, by all means. LA Knight interrupted Logan Paul's segment and the Grayson Waller effect. And you know what? Before we even bring up LA Knight, I got to show you something. You probably have seen this already, but it's definitely newsworthy and it's definitely something you would want to know. We have talked about the WWE draft and some of the disappointment as far as some people. Cameron Grimes, you know, I think, you know, the glass is still half full. So I'm pretty confident Cameron Grimes will get a little momentum. We have not seen some wrestlers as of yet. But Grayson Waller, for the last 2 months, we've been a little bit baffled about the use of Grayson Waller. He hasn't wrestled. He keeps doing these interview segments, and to be honest, with the exception of last night, they're all over the place. Sometimes he almost sounds like he's a baby face. Then he's a full-blown heel. You know, even when he had the interaction with AJ Styles, you know, he was giving an awful lot of compliments to AJ Styles, but in the end, didn't think he would win the World Heavyweight Championship. Grayson Waller's been all over the place, but at the end of the day, we've been asking, like, why is this guy not wrestling? Well, we now know the answer.
My last match on NXT against Carmella Hayes, I broke my leg. Clean break of the fibula. But because I'm a straight-up gangster from southwestern Sydney, I kept going and I was moments away from becoming NXT champion. Fast forward 2 weeks, I hobble on crutches into the WWE draft. And SmackDown, with the steal of the entire draft, chooses Grayson Waller. Despite the fact that I couldn't wrestle, I could barely even walk, the reality is Grayson Waller on one leg has more value than 99% of wrestlers with two. So what did I do? Week after week on Fox, I entertain millions with the Grayson Waller effect, the hottest talk show in all of pro wrestling, rubbing shoulders with the biggest stars in the game. AJ Styles, Charlotte Flair, Asuka, the next tag team champions, Pretty Deadly. And this Friday on Fox, I have the biggest star in the entire industry, Logan Paul. But let's stop talking about the talk show for a bit, because I keep seeing what everyone's saying online. Am I just a talk show host now? If I was, I guarantee I'd be the greatest talk show host in the history of this company. But as good as I am on the Grayson Waller effect, as good as I am on the microphone, I'm better in the ring. So the question is, when am I back? Well, I have good news, but I have bad news. The bad news is, I don't know a thing to you social media flops. See, what I've learned the last 8 weeks, all the pain, all the suffering, all the rehab, doing everything I could possibly do to make sure when I come back, I'm in the best shape of my life. People online couldn't care less. The fans couldn't care less. They didn't celebrate the fact that I was on SmackDown every week. They bitched and they complained because I wasn't wrestling. So I'm not going to tell you. But the good news is you will get an answer very, very soon. It's just going to be on my time. Because that is the Grayson Waller effect.
Pretty cool, man. Pretty cool. Not the broken leg, but yeah, I don't blame him for the frustration. And yeah, here. But at the same time, though, you know, we weren't ripping him. It's just that, and I'm not defending myself. I mean, I would say the same thing 10 times over. It's just that how tremendous he was in NXT. To see him come to the main roster and only doing that, you kind of start asking yourself why. You know, so at least now we know the answer. So definitely looking forward to seeing Grayson Waller back in the ring. Absolutely. I got to show you one more thing, then we'll focus on SmackDown. Did you see this yesterday? All right, look at your screen. Did you see this yesterday? All right. Wade Barrett and Michael Cole were doing a talking segment during SmackDown. And, you know, it looks pretty innocent as you're watching it. But look at the left of your screen. Yeah, I don't, maybe that might have been edited out of New York or the United States recording. But for the sake of entertainment purposes only, yeah, that is the screenshot. that should be a meme. That should be a meme somewhere. But yeah, this is what was shown in the UK yesterday. No, that's not MJF. But Wade Barrett is probably looking at his monitor. WWE production, I've got some bad news. We have to cut out this segment. Just a little something I wanted to share. All right. LA Knight yesterday. I'm going to give you a reference to go look it up, and I think you're going to say to me, DT, yeah, you're right. Lately, a lot of people have been calling LA Knight a ripoff of The Rock. You know, using a lot of The Rock's, you know, mantra and the way he talks and cadence and everything. I've said something different for a long time. And last night, when he was going back and forth with Logan Paul, I was like, motherfucker, I knew it. And this is not a knock on LA Knight. It is good to be inspired by wrestlers that you grew up watching. My God. Most recently, the biggest one everybody talked about was superstar Billy Graham, how Austin Idol and, you know, Scott Steiner and Hulk Hogan and Jesse Ventura and others were all inspired by him. That's good. The Rock has even recently paid tribute to the Iron Sheik, that some of the Iron Sheik, the way some of the words, the jabroni and all that other stuff, he took that from the Iron Sheik. I have always said that LA Knight, when he talks, he doesn't sound like The Rock. To me, he sounds 10 times more like Stone Cold Steve Austin. Last night, when he entered the ring and was talking about Logan Paul, and he's talking about how he appreciates the fact that Logan Paul is a social media star. He appreciates the fact that he is a YouTube star. But right now, you're in my ring. Go back and watch Steve Austin when he had the confrontation with Iron Mike Tyson. Go back when we just talked about it on the History Show a week or two ago, when Steve Austin stunned Vince McMahon for the first time ever. I appreciate the fact that the WWF cares, you know, but if you especially watch Steve Austin when he had the confrontation, if LA Knight would have just done this yesterday, you would have said, felt like, on a much tinier scale, Tyson and Austin. Go back and watch it and look it up, and you'll start saying to yourself, you know, LA Knight is a lot more Stone Cold than The Rock. And I'm kind of shocked that people, more people haven't picked up on that. Everybody's The Rock, The Rock, The Rock. And I'm like, no. I don't see it anywhere near the level of Stone Cold Steve Austin. But LA Knight yesterday, let me tell you something. The fans, now it's no turning back. The WWE, listen, at the end of the day, the WWE wants to make money. The WWE wants to make superstars. Sometimes a flash in the pan, you know, is a flash in the pan. And sometimes it's more than that. You know, I think back to Rusev, when they did Rusev Day. And I'll never forget that supposedly Vince McMahon told Rusev and, can't remember his, you know, his partner, you know, Rusev Day. And Vince is like, no, they're not cheering for you. They're cheering at you, or they're not, like, Aiden English. Thank you, guys. I mean, to make any excuse for that was ridiculous. It was hot, popular. People were buying the shirts. People were spoofing the shirts. And for some reason, WWE would never let it go one step further. I felt that way about Aaron Stevens when he was teaming up with Miz. Yes, it was stupid that, you know, he was doing, you know, the moves, you know, pretending like he felt Miz's pain, you know, but it was catching on, and they started a little bit of merch, and it didn't go anywhere. But on this level, last night, you know, did Puerto Rico help bring Zelina Vega to the next level? In some ways, yes. I don't mean this in any disrespectful way, but where would Zelina Vega be on the food chain right now if Backlash in Puerto Rico never happened? She would still be part of the LWO, but I don't think they would have elevated her as much. And that's a shame. That's a shame, because you kind of look at it now with LA Knight, arguably the most over guy yesterday. And the fans are now changing it up too. Because now when LA Knight goes, yeah, you know, when they do some of his mantra, when they're doing LA Knight, yeah, like the whole crowd is doing it. Here's my honest take about LA Knight. And I don't think I'm off on this. If you look at WWE programming, I mean, it's always been male-dominated as far as viewers go. If you look at AEW programming, it is male-dominated. You could see the difference in the age demographics. A lot more kids at WWE events. A lot more 20-somethings to 30-somethings at AEW. You know, it doesn't mean that it's all, the only age group. But what has WWE been missing for a long time? A lot of wrestlers had elements of it. What has WWE been missing for a long time? A cool, badass male character that, you know, not that goes against authority, but someone who has an attitude, someone who is really, really charismatic and smooth, someone that you just feel is just like somebody you would want, you would go hang out with in, at the bar and have a drink, shoot a little pool. Like, LA Knight has got something that I think WWE's been missing for a long time. You know, it's, and it's not masculinity, because a lot of wrestlers have that, but LA Knight has just got that presence to him, like Austin had, like others had. There's a lot of people over the years. I'm not, listen, will he be, ever be on the level of those guys? No. I mean, honestly, it's a little too late for that. But for the now and the here, why not? Why not? He's got that strong male, you know, like TV-14 attitude, even though he doesn't curse. You know, yes, he throws some insults, you know, talking about Logan Paul entertaining 14-year-old girls. You know, not for nothing, but, you know, you ever cut a promo on someone saying that they entertain, you know, like underage women, like that's their demo? You might say it towards a female wrestler, but to say it towards a male wrestler, you know, you, that's probably as edgy as WWE is going to become, or is, at least until Endeavor, you know, TKO kicks in. But LA Knight, they're letting him ad lib a little bit. Because trust me, no one in WWE's creative is going to say, go out there and mock LA Knight, Logan Paul, for entertaining 14-year-old girls. So that's, I think, what WWE has been missing. Not attitude era, but someone who might walk the fine line a little bit. But not only is that, is entertaining, stern, smooth, can actually work in the ring. And I'm happy for him. Absolutely happy for him. As I look down, look, I got LA Knight autograph cards here. I still have Max Dupri merch. I was going to give it away a while ago, and somebody said, no, 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 hold on to that stuff. You know, it's might be worth something someday. I'm not going to keep collectibles. What am I going to do? Put it on eBay for $100 10 years from now? I don't need $100 that bad. But LA Knight, man, so over yesterday. And it's going to continue. It's going to continue. American crowds are going to see how the London crowd acted yesterday, and they'll build on it. And a lot of it is the opposite of Dominic Mysterio. Dominic Mysterio, now part of the fun is to not allow him to talk. So when he gets on the mic, you know, you intentionally, you know, interrupt him. You get the boos even louder. If you ever watch the crowd towards Dominic, it's similar to Vicky Guerrero. If you watch a lot of the crowd when the decibel level increases when Dominic is trying to say something, you'll see a lot of people in the crowd start laughing, look at each other and smile and laugh. Like they know that they're a part of the show, that they're interacting, like they're stopping Dominic, preventing him from talk. Just like when Vicky used to do the excuse me stuff. You know, you look around and you look at the fans. They're not angry. You look at the crowd towards Dominic. You think they're like, fuck you. Sorry. Fuck you. Boo. Get out of the ring. No, they're booing him and they're laughing. They're having a good time. I almost fucked up my glasses in my hair right now. So anyway, so Logan Paul is a guest on the Grayson Waller Effect. Before Logan Paul could really get into anything, and he's like, you know, trashing the UK, you know, why you booing him? And by the way, I'm going to post the link. This is news It's not big news, but it's something you're probably not aware of. Logan Paul's Prime Drinks. Do you have any idea how much they're selling for overseas in other countries? A YouTube channel that I watch, if you search YouTube, you will not find it. Because it's not labeled. It doesn't show anything, but it's a channel that I normally watch. And it's a couple of Japanese people that will just go out and eat different areas. They just film, you know, where they go. And we talked about, you know, that they go to a hotel that just has robots. They'll go to vending machines or this and that. They were in Singapore. They were in Singapore. And they found a vending machine for Prime, Logan Paul's drink. Some of the drinks in the machine was selling for $35 for one. $20 on average for one. There was no $4, $5, $7. They were selling $35 for one Prime drink. I'm going to post the video. Actually, you know what? I'll show you the video on Monday. I will post a little clip of it, and you'll see the drinks, you'll see the prices, and you convert it to American money, $35, $40 one. And this is not the grape flavor or that one flavor that everybody is overpaying for. No, 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 no. Like even strawberry, you know, is the one with the, not the sparkling one, but the regular one, the strawberry. $40. I'll show it to you Monday. But LA Knight interrupts the Grayson Waller effect yesterday, and here comes Santos Escobar and Butch. Why? Because we were supposed to get that match last week. Remember we were supposed to get Santos Escobar versus Butch versus LA Knight? Well, we got it this week instead. And Butch ended up winning. Butch, members from overseas, Butch goes and grabs the briefcase. Crowd goes nuts. We're big supporters of Butch. But you know Butch has 0% chance of winning Money in the Bank later today. But still, to give that, you know, that feeling that he could possibly win it, that's what they did. Another match that we were supposed to get last week that we ended up getting last night was Bayley taking on Shotzi for Bayley spot and Money in the Bank. I thought the storyline was stupid, and it still is stupid. You know, Io Sky putting up Bayley's spot, she has no authority to do so. So the whole segment was dumb from the beginning. But when you look back in hindsight, I wish somebody would have the balls to put this as a news story. You know, a lot of stuff that they post is just made up in hunches. I wish somebody would post a news story that Vince McMahon told WWE Creative to postpone Bayley versus Shotzi and have it happen the day before Money in the Bank so Bayley would be more over with the crowd. That O2 crowd yesterday serenaded Bayley. I think they were the origins of serenading Bayley. Remember, you know, they just opened up to her yesterday. You could see that Bayley was having a great time with it. Kind of felt bad for Shotzi a little bit, but Bayley does pick up the victory from Shotzi yesterday. So Bayley's spot is still secure. Fun. It was fun. The crowd made it that much more fun, and that crowd is going to be hot today. I mean, I know most of you out there are going to tune into this show afterwards, so we're not going to focus on that all that much at all. But that crowd was hot for Bayley yesterday, and it was fun. It was fun. It's going to be interesting to see if they could get that crowd to turn against her when she screws Io Sky, or, you know, directly or indirectly at Money in the Bank. We had a couple of challenges made yesterday for this coming week's SmackDown, which will be taking place at Madison Square Garden. Karrion Kross wants another opportunity at AJ Styles. And, you know, basically, I think Karrion Kross is starting to, I think the fans are starting to accept him. It doesn't feel out of place anymore when he's advertised for TV. You know, like let me put it like this. I mean, we all support Karrion Kross, but there's no question that in recent months, you advertise someone with Karrion Kross and there was a lot of groans online like, oh, why do you keep doing this? Why do you keep doing this? Me, I've said it for about a month now, get rid of the fucking tarot cards. Doesn't need the tarot cards, get rid of the tarot cards. But Kross issued a challenge to face AJ Styles at next week's SmackDown, and AJ Styles with Meechan in his corner accept the challenge. So that, and by the way, they actually did have a match yesterday. It was a dark match at SmackDown. They had three dark matches yesterday at SmackDown. One was the Latino World Order, Joaquin Wilde and Cruz del Toro. They beat Gallows and Anderson. AJ Styles beat Karrion Kross yesterday. That was after SmackDown ended. And then we also had another one. Rey Mysterio defeating Austin Theory in a non-title match that happened yesterday on SmackDown. Now, we did get Austin Theory yesterday as well. What happened was Sheamus, Butch, and Ridge Holland all go into Adam Pearce's office, and they want a piece of Solo Sikoa, especially Ridge. And Adam Pearce is like, no, can't happen tonight. You know, he's got other things going on. And you know, it was just a corny segment, but you know, they're pissed off and arguing a little bit. Adam Pearce ends up giving Ridge Holland an opportunity to fight Austin Theory in a championship contenders match, which is what, it like AEW with their eliminator matches that they do. Basically, if Ridge Holland could beat Austin Theory, then Ridge Holland could end up getting a title shot for his United States Championship. This match, if you went to the bathroom and came back, the match was over. Basically, Ridge gets some offense. Ridge is in his home turf now, getting cheered from the fans, showing a lot of impressive moves in the beginning. But then Austin Theory gets knocked to the outside, and Ridge Holland, with all due respect, looking like an Oompa Loompa, you know, starts walking like in between the ropes to try to grab Austin Theory to pull him back in the ring, and Austin Theory pulls him, and he hits throat first in the ropes. Remember what happened to Ridge Holland's throat last week, Solo Sikoa. So Austin Theory pulls Ridge Holland into the ropes, throat first. Ridge Holland is holding his throat. Austin Theory with a drop kick to Ridge Holland's throat. 1, 2, 3. Match was like 2 minutes. Way too soon. Ridge Holland, you ain't getting no title shot anytime soon, but someone else will. After the match is over, Austin Theory with a little continued beatdown, and then here comes Sheamus, and he makes the save. And next week, we are getting Sheamus versus Austin Theory for the United States Championship. You think Sheamus will win it? I'm not decided yet, but you almost feel like you might need to do something with Austin Theory. I mean, he's got a nice little title run right now, but Austin Theory, man, talk about lost in the shuffle. I mean, let's be honest, and he's definitely a future megastar for WWE. But since WrestleMania, beating John Cena, not much at all. Not much at all. I think we could possibly end up going in a different direction as well, which we'll get into in a few moments. But so Sheamus makes the save, and now all of a sudden, no eliminator match, no championship contender match needed. Sheamus gets a shot on Austin Theory's belt. Bayley versus Shotzi, like I said, Bayley gets the win, a little bit of help from Io Sky. And, you know, this was kind of like ass backwards. You know, Bayley getting all the love. You know, it's not that they didn't like Shotzi, but they just liked Bayley that much more. But after the match, do we see a backstage segment where Bayley and Io Sky are hanging out, and here comes Shotzi, and we got words being exchanged and insults. And then they start attacking Shotzi. And then, as I showed you earlier, Bayley cuts Shotzi's hair, and she's walking around and posting it all over social media. And it looks like Shotzi is going to get a little bit of a tweak in her look. Asuka defending the women's championship against Charlotte Flair. Bianca Belair is not allowed at ringside, but she bought a ticket. She bought a ticket. So she's sitting ringside, and we have the match going on, and it ended up a stinker. Now, this could possibly be the reason why they may interject. Personally, the word going around online said Charlotte Flair may replace Zelina Vega tonight's Money in the Bank. I'm not reporting that. I don't know if it's legit or not. In my opinion, if Zelina Vega is not injured, add Charlotte Flair. Add her. I know there's a lot of people that don't like Charlotte Flair, but make no mistake about it, she is one of the most talented women in this generation, if not the. You have seven men competing on the Money in the Bank ladder match, the men's side. You only have six women on the women's side. You could simply have something where Charlotte goes in Adam Pearce's office, you know, during the pre-show, and she says, Adam, Bianca Belair was supposed to be barred from ringside, you know, buying a ticket. She caused the DQ victory because Asuka gets in Bianca's face. Bianca starts going at it with Asuka. Referee calls for the bell. Asuka wins, disqualification. Charlotte Flair's pissed off. And then Bianca Belair, while Asuka is laid out, stomach down on the table, hits a KOD to Charlotte onto Asuka. So now I could see in storyline Charlotte Flair going up to Adam Pearce at Money in the Bank and say, what was that on SmackDown? I thought Bianca was supposed to be barred at ringside. She was still ringside even though she had a ticket. I deserve an opportunity. You have seven men in the ladder match. You only have six women. Put me in the women's ladder match. I think that's why they did the DQ. I think that's why the match ended early. And I think Charlotte Flair could be added to the match. I wouldn't take Zelina Vega out of it. Why upset all the Zelina Vega fans online? Seriously, is it that much of a big deal if Charlotte is added as a seventh person instead of replacing Zelina Vega? If Zelina's injured, fine. All right, then you have Charlotte replace her. But if you look at storyline purposes, Charlotte could just complain to Adam Pearce. That was bullshit, what happened on SmackDown. Put me in the ladder match. I deserve that opportunity. You gave me an opportunity, and Bianca still got involved. So the more I think about it, that could end up happening. We'll find out in a matter of hours. So Asuka wins on DQ. And after the match is over, Bianca Belair takes them all out. So then we get to the final showdown between the Bloodline. And nice setup for Money in the Bank. Roman Reigns, Solo Sikoa, Paul Heyman in the ring. Roman Reigns, you know, we weren't the ones. I am the one. And he has London acknowledge him. And he's talking about more like he's a father to the Usos. And he says that that's what fathers do. You forgive your kids. You forgive when they do things wrong. Even if they do things wrong more than once, you forgive them. Forgive them. And he's telling the Usos, come out here and apologize, and let's move on. So now the Usos come out, and they're at ringside on the floor. You got Paul Heyman, Roman Reigns, and Solo in the ring. And they're cutting their promo, and they're talking about how Roman Reigns hasn't been pinned in 3 years. When is Roman Reigns going to be pinned again? Tomorrow, meaning Money in the Bank. And talking about tribal chief. Jimmy doesn't want to be a tribal chief. Jay don't want to be a tribal chief. There's only one person that they would be willing to accept as a tribal chief. And they look at Solo Sikoa. And yes, that's why the idea of the Bloodline Civil War, you know, it's not just going to be 2-on-2. There's a very good possibility at SummerSlam we may have Roman Reigns versus Jimmy Uso versus Jey Uso versus Solo Sikoa, because Roman thought it was fucking hilarious that Solo Sikoa would be the tribal chief, and then Solo just starts looking at him like, you know, what the fuck is so funny? And Roman is like, a little bit too much of the acting. But Jimmy Uso is still on the floor. Jey Uso steps up on the apron, and he's right in the face of Roman Reigns, and he pie-faces Roman Reigns, the opposite. And then the next thing you know, Jimmy Uso super kicks Roman Reigns, knocks him on his ass, and we get a flat-out brawl leading into Money in the Bank. I still think this match may end up closing out Money in the Bank. I still think it's going to end up being Solo Sikoa who gets pinned. And I still think that on SmackDown next week in Madison Square Garden, Roman Reigns is going to read the riot act to Solo, bringing up, reminding everyone that Solo Sikoa was the one that got pinned against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Solo Sikoa got pinned against the Usos. Solo Sikoa needs to step it up. Would they do it so fast where Solo Sikoa super kicks Roman? I don't think so. We're still a little ways away to SummerSlam. You don't do it this soon, but I think that will end up happening. A fun episode of SmackDown yesterday. Yes, it was pre-recorded, but I don't think that's going to hurt the ratings that much at all because there was enough build for Money in the Bank that I think people wanted to tune in, and all the early spoilers had this show looking pretty damn good. Pretty freaking good. So I gave you the dark matches already. Very quickly, I got some other results I want to give you, and then we'll get into a couple other little tidbits and get out of here. I want to give two super shout-outs before we go any further. Shout-out to Nero Faye. Thank you for the six shekels. Thank you. Hope everything is well in Israel. I hope you're going to tune into Money in the Bank tonight and enjoy it. I know there's a little bit of a time difference, but hope everything is safe over there. I see a lot of shit going on from afar, and, you know, that's rough, man. That's rough. I mean, somebody said to me the other day, would you rather live on the border of Israel and Palestine, or would you rather live in, like, Kensington? Believe it or not, I probably would choose Kensington, Pennsylvania, because at least in Kensington, these people are so, I mean, I'm not making fun of them. It's disturbing what's going on over there, but they're so fucking wired that you could just walk by and they don't even know you're there. You know, seriously, like you walk by, I mean, it's absolutely horrendous what's going on over there and, you know, other areas of the country as well. Michael says he never heard of that town. Holy shit. Google, go on YouTube, just type in Kensington, Pennsylvania. Woof. Benjamin never heard of it either. Holy shit. Right now, I guarantee there's a lot of people tuning in and like, how the fuck did you never hear of look up Kensington, Pennsylvania. It's like a third world country. And the drug abuse, watch it. It's near Philadelphia, too. It's near Philadelphia. I don't remember that area when I used to go to Philly for all the ECW stuff. And you know, here's a good segue, ECW. Let's quickly talk about AEW Fight Forever. I'll give you some results from Rampage yesterday and Collision. Actually, you know what? I'll share this with you now. Rampage yesterday had Claudio Castagnoli defend and successfully defend the Ring of Honor Heavyweight Championship against Commander. Sean Spears over The Blade. Hikaru Shida over Taya Valkyrie. And Johnny TV, John Morrison, QT Marshall, they defeated Matt Hardy and Isaiah Cassidy, which they are now calling Brother K. Brother K, I guess a little spoof of Brother Ray. Brother K. The big news coming out of Rampage, that Ethan Page is starting to turn heel. He actually stopped the beatdown to Matt Hardy and Isaiah Cassidy after the match was over. The Acclaimed end up hitting the ring and, you know, typical episode of Rampage, but, I'm telling you, we talked about it a week after Collision's debut. I posted a poll on social media, and everybody, for the most part, interpreted it as a negative poll. I've been saying this since week one of Collision, that Collision is nothing more than AEW Dynamite 2.0. It is Saturday Night Dynamite. The same people that run AEW Dynamite run AEW Collision. It's the same writing, the same format. You may get a couple of extra people in the kitchen, but at the end of the day, the same chef, the same chef is cooking the shows. My friends, this is the preview for AEW Collision this week. Tell me how this feels any different from an AEW Dynamite. MJF will be wrestling. They don't reveal his opponent. I will reveal his opponent for you. He will be taking on Kip Morris. Sounds like somebody from Saved by the Bell. Kip Morris, the stepbrother of Zach. And then MJF will have a second match. I won't say who that is. That will be a surprise. Miro will be in action. What did we fucking say before the even a debut episode of Collision? They better not start doing the Andrade in action, Miro in action, Powerhouse Hobbs in action. Miro will be taking on the superstar, Anthony Henry. Ricky Starks will be taking on Juice Robinson in the quarterfinal of the Owen Hart tournament. Chris Statlander will defend the TBS championship. They fucking did it, everyone. I said, you have Dynamite on TBS, you have Collision on TNT. Have the TNT title defended on Collision. Have the TBS title defended on TBS. No, we have the TBS title being defended on TNT. Chris Statlander will be taking on Lady Frost. Her run is turning into Jade Cargill's. The only thing is that she's got much more ability, you know, because she's had a much longer career. And then you have Samoa Joe versus Roderick Strong in the Owen Hart tournament quarterfinal. CM Punk. Guest commentary. Just take CM Punk out and put Chris Jericho in his place. Or put Bryan Danielson in his place. This is an episode of Dynamite. And again, that's not a bad thing. But people, the reason why no one in the journalist world will admit that is because for 3 months, they convinced you that Collision was going to be an entirely different program format, different rosters, segregated, hard split, light split, soft split, banana split. They lied for months, and now they can't lie anymore. So now they got to just sit there, look, keep silent, and not say a fucking word. And what's happening? You use the Dynamite format. No wonder they had 28% in the ratings drop last week. This is a holiday weekend, so I'll write off this week's rating. This is Dynamite. If you admit that it's Dynamite and you look forward to it as like a Saturday night Dynamite, I think you'll enjoy it a lot more. If I go, all right, let's use, what's a horror film that used a different character? Okay, what's a horror film that Rob Zombie did that was entirely different format? Oh, here, Halloween. Didn't he do a whole different type of Halloween movie? I think he did. If I go watch the movie Halloween, yes, I'm outdated reference, but if I go to see Halloween, and now Halloween 2 is being advertised, I know that Halloween 2 is going to have the same characters in the same scenario format like Halloween 1. It's just continuing. And then you get Halloween 3. Season of the Witch. Actually, that's better than Rob Zombie. Season of the Witch. If I would have went to Halloween 3 and just imagine all of these journalists in the wrestling world for months telling me that Halloween 3 is going to be, you know, oh, totally different thing, this and that. It's not going to be anything with Michael Myers. It's not going to have anything. Then I go into it knowing that Michael Myers has nothing to do with it. Jamie Lee Curtis has nothing to do with it. So I know that I'm going in there and I'm going to see something totally different. Now, what happens if that's hype for three months and then I go into Halloween 3 and I see fucking Jamie Lee Curtis at the beginning of the screen? I'll be like, what the fuck is this? I was expecting a totally different movie. Totally different people. You gave me the same people. Halloween 3 was the worst horror film of all time, in my honest opinion. I hated that movie. I would never put a mask over, no joke, I would never put a pumpkin mask over my head. I had nightmares from that movie. I was a kid. But that's what I'm talking about. For 3 months, they convinced you that we were going to watch something entirely different. And we got Dynamite. If they would have told everyone, it's going to be Dynamite, but it's going to feature wrestlers that always gets lost in a shuffle on Wednesdays, okay, that's fine. Good, I'll get to see a little bit more of Miro and not against Anthony Henry. You know what I mean? So this is just Dynamite. And sooner or later, you'll see people, you know, this is kind of morphed into a Dynamite. Duh. So that is your lineup for Collision. NXT Level Up, they only had 2 matches. And by the way, anybody feel like somebody is over-photoshopping Blair Davenport at all? It almost seems like they morphed 2 different faces into one. I don't know why that is, but Blair Davenport over Kalani Jordan, Joe Coffey over Miles Bourne, and I'm still convinced Dana Brooke, I almost said Dana White, Dana Brooke is going to be turning heel. She is turning heel. That is happening. Next week, SmackDown, Edge makes his return. He will be on the Grayson Waller effect, and will we get an interruption from Austin Theory? Not sure. Austin Theory will be defending the United States Championship against Sheamus, but I'm wondering where Edge fits into all of this. I would have loved to have seen Edge maybe challenge Seth Rollins. Yeah, I know we've seen that before, but Edge challenging Roman Reigns, there's a bloodline civil war going on right now. I don't know how that would really fit in. Plus, nobody believes in their right mind that Edge is going to be winning the heavyweight championship. So we got to see. Somebody is going to interrupt Edge. Somebody's going to come out there and interrupt Edge. The big question is who? Someone else that we have not seen. And who knows? Maybe this person will make an appearance in Madison Square Garden, whether on TV or a dark match. I want to thank Eric Williams for the 5 spot. Thank you for the $5 super chat. Eric, what's up with Lashley? And lack of him to any ideas, what do I think they could do with him? I think Bobby Lashley, I think he could be fighting for a championship. The problem is, if you look at SmackDown, and I know what people are going to say, well, the draft took place and this and that. Let's look at both brands with Bobby Lashley right now. Bobby Lashley is not going to go at it with Roman Reigns. Ain't happening. Not now. You have the Bloodline Civil War. Doesn't make sense. So that's tied up. Austin Theory, they have done that way too many times already. If you go back and you look over the last 12 months, you'd be kind of surprised how many times they have Bobby Lashley and Austin Theory going at it. You look at tag team championships, he's got nobody to team up with right now. MVP is not going to go back and have even a semi-part-time wrestling career. So SmackDown titles are kind of out of the question. You look on the Raw side, I would fucking pay to see Bobby Lashley feud with Gunther. I think that would be fucking tremendous. Battle of the Giants. I don't know how well that will mesh. You look at Seth Rollins' championship, it almost makes sense. Drew McIntyre, Bobby Lashley, take your pick. Either one of them could start feuding with Seth Rollins for that championship, but I kind of think that Finn Balor and Seth Rollins could have a rematch at SummerSlam, and some people are even coming up with the idea of putting Damian Priest in that mix as well. That you could have Damian Priest versus Finn Balor versus Seth Rollins in a 3-way triple threat match at SummerSlam, and that would be very intriguing. Adam Pearce, WWE, forcing both members of Judgment Day to fight each other. And then they'll play off on TV. You know, I don't want to fight my partner, but that gives us a 66% chance of winning. So I could see that very much happening. Right now with Bobby Lashley, Man, I know this is going to sound bad. I know this is going to sound bad. Why not throw him in NXT for a few weeks? I'm not saying he has to go up against Carmelo Hayes. Maybe have him go up with Bron Breakker. I know Bron Breakker's going to have Ilya for a little bit, but maybe just have him show up in NXT just to get a little work in, get a little TV time, get some additional eyes on it. I think Bobby Lashley versus Bron Breakker would be decent enough to go with. I don't know if I would want to see Carmelo Hayes and Bobby Lashley. It's not even a size difference. I said something on Wednesday Night Dynamite that shocked a lot of people, and I'll say it here in case you didn't tune into that show. I found myself rooting for Baron Corbin towards the end of Wednesday's match. I don't like Baron Corbin at all. The only reason why I even rooted for him is because if you watch that Wednesday match, him and Carmelo Hayes, that match went on 5 to 7 minutes too long, and Baron Corbin was so dominant towards the end. Like, you lost suspension of disbelief with Carmelo Hayes kicking out of everything. Like, the deep six and, you know, the table spot and everything else, any other human being, and Carmelo Hayes has not been set up like Superman. You know what I mean? I mean, yes, he's tough and he won't quit and this and that, but it was a little too much in that match. And it became non-believable. You know, it's just like, oh, come on. You know, I don't like it in AEW sometimes. We watch, when we used to do the watch parties for Rampage, you'd have the main event. You would have, like, finishing moves put on wrestlers, and then you look at the clock and there's still 7 minutes left in the show. Like, oh, you're going to kick out at one. Like, a move that should have killed someone, they kick out at two, and they kick out at two. And you would always hear Excalibur go, no! He kicked out! And after a while, it's like, oh, come on. Come on. This isn't fucking Michael Myers getting shot by Donald Pleasant since we're on the Halloween kick. You know, he falls through a window and then you look down. No, he kicked out. He disappeared. He went to the mall. That's one of my pet peeves with all of the shows. A little bit too much sometimes. But I think that's maybe an idea for Bobby Lashley. Odyssey Jones. We've talked about Odyssey Jones. Actually, you know what? I take it back. I want to see Bobby Lashley and Bronson Reed go out a little bit more. Bring Odyssey Jones on Raw. He's drafted the role. We've talked about Odyssey for the last couple of weeks. Maybe you have Odyssey and Bobby Lashley go at it. Maybe a three-way. Trust me. Even if Vince is involved in creative, if Triple H said, Hey, Vince, what do you think about Bobby Lashley versus Bronson? Versus Odyssey Jones. And then Vince, Odyssey, I don't know who that is. And then he looks at the size of all three. You ever see that animated file when I think Stacy Keibler is dancing on the table and Vince is like, that's I think Vince's reaction would be, book it, damn it. All right. Yeah, we got to bring it up for a minute. We got to bring it up for a minute. AEW Fight Forever has hit the shelves. Not trying to be disrespectful. I was offered complimentary download or game to play it and review it. I don't have PS5. I don't have Xbox Series, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Nintendo Switch. Xbox Series S, X, One. All I have is Windows. And I don't think it's out for PS2 or PS3. I was offered a downloadable copy. And I said, nah, I'm not doing a review. The thing was, play it, give an honest review. As of now, I said no. The reason why I don't want to play it or give it a review is not that I'm going to dislike it. I know I'm going to love the game, even though it's not being, you know, getting the best reviews. My age, I go back to, you know, games on the Game Boy and Nintendo and ColecoVision and Atari. So anything now is still crazy amounts better than what it was yesteryear. The problem with this game, and this is my honest advice for each and every one of you out there, and I'm not throwing shade on other wrestling media, but I'm just going to say it. If you want an honest review, just because somebody writes honest review, it's not an honest review. Because their view about AEW is so heavily skewed in the first place that there's always an excuse for everything else. You know, AEW Collision goes down 27%. Well, the second ever episode of Dynamite went down 27%. Nobody fucking knew about what AEW was yet. It was only on TV for 1 week in its existence. And you're comparing Collision with a four-year history behind it? So there's always an excuse for something. If you want a legitimate, honest review about the AEW Fight Forever video game, go to places like GameStop, go to IGN, go to Open Critic, go to Push Square, go to places like that. Places where people aren't these hardcore AEW fans or haters. Go and read reviews from video game buffs, period. That's why I don't want to do a review. Because if I do a review, if I'm negative, oh, DT, you're a hypocrite. You said, oh, don't check out any wrestling media's review, and now you're doing a review. That's why I won't do one. I've seen in the last 24 hours, honest review, honest review, honest review, and I click on it, and honestly, I already closed the file. Just think of that segment with Wade Barrett earlier and the kid at ringside. Honest review. That's pretty much what I saw. I watched 90 seconds of it, turned it off. IGN is giving it a 6 out of 10. And in comparison to WWE 2K23, they gave WWE 8 out of 10. No, I'm not comparing WWE to AEW, but I'm just showing you a trend. Open Critic ranked the AEW Fight Forever video game 65. They rated the WWE video game 85. Push Square gave it 6 out of 10. They gave WWE 8 out of 10. I could give you 10 different sources right now, and they're almost all identical. Most critics gave the WWE 2K23 game an 8 out of 10 on average. Most critics are giving the AEW Fight Forever video game a 6 out of 10. And the reason why I don't think it's that bad is because the gameplay is still a hell of a lot better than what games were 20 years ago. But one of them posted something about the game that I think is the overall problem with AEW's perspective as far as wrestling fans go. And I think people are going to agree with me on this. Check this out. Push Square. They did a whole in-depth review. Now, I heard that the Road to Elite, that's their, you know, like the weekly game that, you know, it's basically you all these challenges and you take the Road to Elite. I heard that you could win the championship like early on and then it doesn't acknowledge that you're the champion throughout the whole thing. There's a lot of flaws in it. But Push Square, after reading their entire review, they summed it up like this. And it's really interesting because you could kind of compare this to the AEW product. This is what they said. And I think it's very, very fair. They said AEW Fight Forever is an incredibly faithful tribute to 1990s wrestling gaming. And it's clear that a lot of love has gone in to ensure the presentation, the gameplay, the atmosphere, all harken back to that time with unyielding accuracy. But the world has moved on. And more importantly, wrestling games have moved on. And the dogged determination to honor what came before has resulted in a title that will ultimately prove incredibly divisive. Most egregiously, the game feels decidedly budget while demanding a decidedly non-budget price tag. And while the product may improve with updates and time, in its current state, it's hard to recommend Fight Forever to anyone but the most hardcore of AEW fans. You could say that about AEW, period. I think that is probably the most... That is not a total shot. This is... If you're a hardcore AEW fan, you're going to love this game. But if you're just a gamer, maybe not even a wrestling fan, there's a lot to dislike about it. The one thing that people complain about, I see repeatedly, is that there's no entrances. Like, you see the person on the stage for 10 seconds and it fades to black. But yet, when you're doing tournament matches, you see the wrestlers coming down the rampway and everything like that. Like, they cut a lot of corners. And the corners that they cut was more 90s. Now, here's another review. I think IGN might have said this. This is just the last paragraph, but I think this sums it up as well. Here's another screenshot, by the way. Let me give you this one. Yeah. This CM Punk. Yeah, let me give you this review. This is just the final paragraph, but I think it sums it up. AEW Fight Forever, much like the company it represents, is a cocky young upstart trying to take the crown from a titan. Also, much like its source material, its first outing is a decent foundation for what its future could provide. The roster is a good primer of the current AEW lineup. There are enough match types to keep things fresh for a while. And the road to Elite is an irreverent look. This person spelled it wrong. Irreverent look at the life of a wrestler that made me smile. There are some bumps in the road, particularly the lack of trios matches and the disappointing entrances, but those are all things that can be fixed in future installments. If AEW truly plans to fight forever in the video game world, they've thrown a decent punch. Here's something else. Did you see the screen? There's no commentary. Jim Ross, it is typed, and you have to read it to yourself. So, right now, there is mixed reviews. If you go on any of these non-wrestling review sites, what you will find is people who hate AEW or love WWE are going to give this thing a dumb thumbs down and find everything wrong with it. Those who are hardcore AEW fans and those who do not like WWE will turn around and find everything to praise it. Then you got the others that are desperately trying to get accepted by AEW that will make an excuse for everything. If you want an honest review of this game, go on non-wrestling websites. Go on non-wrestling pages. Because, and I'm going to go back 23 years. I've told this on the shows before. 23 years ago, ECW came up with Hardcore Revolution. I was one of the first to get this game. I looked at it and I'm like, holy shit, this looks awesome. This is epic. This is amazing. I can't wait to get this fucking game, Hardcore Revolution. Holy shit. And I drove probably an hour and a half to get the game because Video Game Central had a delay on their games. If any of you have never played ECW Hardcore Revolution, just go on YouTube and just watch a video clip of it. I remember bringing the game home, putting it in my PlayStation, turning it on, and I'm getting this chill on my spine like, holy shit, ECW. Now, at this time, I'm doing a little work for them, pushing tickets and everything, so like, I can't believe it. Seeing Harry Slash in the game. Harry, shout out to you, my friend. Good guy. Never forget what you did for me, USA Pro Wrestling. But as start the game, and again, I'm not trying to be an absolute douchebag asshole right now, but If you would have told me that Michael J. Fox was one of like the persons that did the moves for the game, I would have believed it. Because as they're standing there waiting to lock up, you see this. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And I lock up, and the gameplay is awful. It is the drizzling shits. I'm looking at the wrestlers, the characters. Here is AEW's early roster, which had about 47 people on it. Not too bad. That's the AEW roster. And this is the ECW roster. And you look at the faces, and they look realistic, and you're like, oh, man, this is fucking sweet. Then you play the game, and you're like, what is this? And I'm playing Fight Forever. I'm playing Hardcore Revolution. And subconsciously, my brain is trying to brainwash me that this is awesome, this is epic, this is my favorite promotion. They got their video game out there. Who would have ever thought that ECW would have their own video game? Hardcore Revolution, it's fucking awesome. Made by Acclaim. I thought, oh, this is tremendous. But meanwhile, I'm playing this fucking game, and it is awful. It is the drizzling shits. And then they come out with Anarchy Rules. I don't remember if I bought Anarchy Rules or not. My point is that I was such a hardcore fan of ECW that probably when I did my hotline that night, I probably said, the game's good. I had fun. I enjoyed it. Getting to play some of my favorite, I enjoyed it. But probably within a week, I just put it on the shelf. It was, and listen, we're not comparing 2000s technology to 2023. But my point is, if you are a hardcore fan of AEW, even if there's glitches, even if you do a move and you vanish, almost like you were in the Titan underwater, you know, you just disappear. Who cares? You're like, if you fall off the ladder and it looks like a Lego, who cares? You know, it's a heavy price tag, though. You're paying $60 for the game, and if you want the Elite version, you pay $72 for the game. So it is a hefty price tag. But understand that AEW is getting a very, very small percentage of the revenue in this game. When you figure out how much the manufacturers are getting, how much the stores are getting, even the wrestlers, it is tiny, which is very this was more about, we got to put out a video game. Even if we break even, we got to put out a video game. There's no question about it, you know, that a lot of money was put into it. With all due respect, when you see people saying, oh, $1 million was put in this game, Tony Khan is a billionaire. Just imagine that he has 8,000 millions. 8 or 9,000 millions. It cost $1 million for the game. Oh, so now I have 7,999 millions. It's not a big deal when you think about it in the end. So, there you go. The game is getting mixed reviews. Let's see what they improve. Let's see what they tweak. One thing is for certain. They're coming out with more games. They just trademarked the name Rise to the Top. That is going to be a mobile game that's going to come out either late this year or maybe even early next year. Rise to the Top. It's a mobile video game. But as far as the platforms like PlayStation and Xbox and everything else, they're going to pay very close attention to what the complaints are. They're going to pay very close attention to the non-wrestling sites out there. They're going to pay close attention to what wrestling fans' biggest complaints were. Commentary, entrances, glitches, a lot of wrestlers missing from it. You know, and they'll improve on it. They should improve on it. You know, unfortunately, back then, the technology wasn't what it is now. They will have to sacrifice some of what they have now in favor of other things. You say to yourself, do I want to play a mini game that has shooting hoops in AEW Fight Forever game? Or do we eliminate the hoops and have like a little bit of a longer entrance for a wrestler? this is what has to be decided later on. But I thought that 90s reference sums up AEW. AEW is trying to be 90s, Attitude Era, with the Japanese and the American and the hardcore and the blood and the violence and the derogatory language and the triple C's, Chaos, Clusterfuck, Crackerjack, Surprise. That sums up AEW. What you got to worry about is, as that person said about wrestling video games, the world moved on. How many people still are stuck in the 90s, stuck in the 2000s? For a lot of fans, they didn't grow up in the 90s. When they might have been way too young in the 90s. So they're getting to experience something that you only experienced back then. But what happens when you, okay, I got my fill, but, you know, we're in 2023 now. You know, then you got to start thinking, okay, you got to either adapt or you're going to get a smaller and smaller audience. So, all right, that is pretty much it. I think we covered everything that we needed to cover. So, Money in the Bank for my United States friends out there starts at 3 p.m. Eastern today. I will be watching it. I have a wedding to go to tonight at 6. So it's almost like perfect timing because as soon as Money in the Bank is pretty much over, I'll be on the road going to a wedding. But I will be here live Sunday night, 8.05 p.m. for the sit-down. We will definitely have some overall thoughts on Money in the Bank. I will definitely talk about it a little bit tomorrow. As far as a recap and review, this is important. Let me give everybody the lowdown as far as the Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle show goes. Tuesday is the 4th of July. Kev Castle will not be around Tuesday, the 4th of July. We've been on normal. We've been doing episodes, special episodes on Tuesdays. So Tuesday is totally out of the question. As of right now, Kev has a busy weekend promoting bands, heavy metal bands for concerts. Monday is a possibility. If Kev is around Monday afternoon, Kev and I will be recording a Money in the Bank recap and review. We will record it, and then that will go online live Tuesday morning, early, maybe like midnight. This way, during the 4th of July holiday, if you're not doing nothing, you could go check out our recap and review. If Kev is not available Monday afternoon, then my recap and review will be part of Monday night show. So you will definitely be getting a recap and review, and it will happen Monday night. Right now, I don't know if it's just going to be me doing it or if it's going to be Kev and I. But I will definitely let everybody know Monday afternoon. I'll post it on social media. I'll post it on Patreon. I'll post it in the community section on YouTube. So everybody will have a good idea as far as, you know, like what the format will be with the recap and review. I think it's going to be an awesome event. The crowd is going to be hot. The crowd is going to make the event that much better. Just it's going to come down to Damian Priest, Logan Paul, and LA Knight with that ladder. So we'll see which of the three gets it. Let's see if Solo Sikoa gets pinned again. That's my go-to. I think Solo is the one that's going to get pinned. That's going to start teasing the fallout with him and Roman Reigns. We'll see where that leads. Brock Lesnar. When Kevin and I did the predictions Tuesday and we brought up Brock Lesnar showing up at the O2, you know, laying out Cody Rhodes, people thought we were nuts. That looks like it could happen. Then we got to see on the women's Money in the Bank side, would they dare give Trish that briefcase? I don't think Becky needs it. Zoe Stark, it's too soon. Zelina Vega, I definitely don't see her getting it. You look at everybody else in the match, Io Sky is my only pick. It's either Io Sky or Trish Stratus. And then we have everything else. So if you want full-blown predictions, not only for the event, but beyond, make sure you check out Tuesday's episode that Kevin and I did. It's on DonTony.com, and I'm very, very proud of that episode. I know Kev is as well because we fucking nailed so many things, and I think they're all going to come true. And if it comes true, it's not that bragging, but excitement where this is going to lead to as far as SummerSlam goes. So, everyone, thank you as always for the support. Much love. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy your 4th of July holiday if you celebrate it. I mean, it's going to be a real, real fun weekend. Pro wrestling, you got Collision taking place tonight. Can't go wrong. And if you're around Sunday night, join me, 8:05 p.m. Eastern over here. So I'm out of here, guys. Much love as always, and I'll catch you all again soon. Be well.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the host. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who claim they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.